for members only. Golf Smarter number 427, published on March 11, 2014.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
Golf State of Mind, part two in our conversation with David McKenzie.
This is Golf Smarter.
Welcome back to Golf Smarter for members only, David.
Hi, Brad.
Thank you again for joining us, for sticking around for the rest of this conversation, because I have so many more questions that I wanted to talk about with you on Golf State of Mind.
Great. It's been my pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. Where are you based? If somebody wants to start taking lessons from you, how does that work?
I'm in Washington, D.C., so I do give face-to-face lessons in the D.C. metropolitan area, Northern Virginia, Maryland. But I do a lot of lessons on Skype. It's become quite popular, and it works. We can fit lessons around people's schedules, and all you've got to do is switch on your computer. And I use a couple of programs. One of them is eGolf Plan, and that players are able to record stats after their round. So I go in and I can check exactly how someone's how their performance was during rounds, and then we on a weekly basis we meet and we talk about the experience of the round, and we also refer to these stats for areas of improvement.
Okay. All right. One of the things you said towards the end of our last part of the conversation was you talked about practicing and going to the range, but you were referring to practicing the mental game, not just working on your swing mechanics. Is that right?
Yes. I'm not discounting swing coaches and the need for swing coaching. I think that's that is an element of the game that that players need to work on. But for me, the more you can synchronize your body and your mind through visualization, through feel, and ingraining those feelings and just becoming aware of your body. So I wouldn't for example, an example of a bad practice session for me would be to stand on the driving range, one target, a bucket of balls, perhaps a couple of clubs, and just hitting straight to that same target. That's not, to me, that's not effective practice.
Why?
Effective practice. Because that's nothing like it would be on the golf course. Mm-hmm. On the golf course, you're changing shots all the time, and you're having to play different kinds of shots. So my idea for fulfilling an effective practice session on the driving range would be to hit no more than three balls with the same club. I'd be picking different targets. I'd be trying to hit different trajectories, moving the ball around in my stance, hitting different trajectories. I would try to hit as many different kinds of shots as I could. I would even try to hit, a slice, a hook, a draw. I've got a practice drill on the website called the nine shots, where, you're playing a fade and a draw and a straight shot with three different trajectories. And so you end up with nine shots. So it's that variety. Otherwise, you just get into range rhythm. I think it's very, very easy to think that you've mastered the game on the driving range. And that's why a lot of golfers say, I wish I could take my driving range game to the golf course. And there's so many things that are wrong with what they're doing on the driving range that, they wouldn't want to take that game to the golf course.
No, we don't. But like, if you go to the driving range and you'll see, let's just say there's 25 people out there. And you just kind of stand back and watch for a while. I can almost bet that 99% of those guys are hitting one club over and over and over again. Why is it that just seems the way you're supposed to do it? And what's really interesting, especially if you're warming up for a round, I'm guilty of this myself, going, okay, that was the shot I wanted. I don't want to do that again. I mean, you just, as soon as you get one that you like, it's like, okay, I can move on now.
Yeah, if I'm understanding the question.
I don't even know if I asked one, did I? I realized there was this long pause. I'm like, did I ask him anything? Sorry.
No, I think I know what I know what you mean. Yeah, you hit one club, one shot, one club, and because you're working on a swing drill, you're trying to ingrain that that swing into your muscle memory, and that's how a lot of golfers spend a lot of their time, and it's just to me. It's not effective, and I've been there, and I used to throw $8 down for a bucket of balls, bucket of ball after bucket of balls, and make those same mistakes over and over again. Mm. Now I practice in a completely different way. It's about imagining holes. It's about trying to create pressure on myself, playing games. I think that games should be a big part of practice. And I actually have a book on practice drills, which is designed for that purpose, to create scores. Even on the driving range, you can play games with yourself to try and create the same kind of pressure, not get into that that habit of just, you hit one ball, oh, I didn't like that shot, I'll hit, I've got another one here, just pull it out of the basket. It's about every shot, should have a purpose and a consequence.
Give me an example of what you mean by these games that you play while you're on the range.
I would be visualizing holes in my mind, and so you could, essentially play holes, and imagine. I mean, Ben Hogan used to talk about this, like playing holes in his mind. So you can actually play against yourself on the driving range and imagine. You're in a certain situation. Imagine that you're on the golf course. I heard about Graham McDowell like running on the spot, like on the driving range to try and get his heart rate up. Not that I can imagine many listeners are going to want to do that on a packed driving range. But the point is that he's trying to simulate that feeling on the golf course, being under pressure,
being amped,
feeling
up.
That. Yeah, exactly. And so, it's that most golfers just practice thinking that, there's always that next ball, and that's not the mentality that we're trying to practice. Because I think, practicing is an opportunity to practice your mental game, just as it is your physical game. And I think that gets missed. Mm. So I've got, I've got a number of different games in my practice drills book where, you're playing games and getting scores. So every shot has a meaning.
On your website, I was noticing that you have in your mental game section, one of the lessons that you have here is how to play non-conscious golf. And how is that different than unconscious golf? I just answered my own question in my head. Unconscious golf
Fred,
is...
That's actually, I didn't write that article. A guy called Colin Cromack, who's a contributor to Golf State of Mind, wrote that article. And I'm still trying
Colin's
to digest
the
whole non-conscious versus subconscious. So I might not be able to answer that as well as I would like at this time. But
That's fair.
Yeah,
but...
Go
ahead.
Yeah, he's... for me, the subconscious, your swing is made with your subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are just important things to think about, like the division of what your mind, what these different parts of your mind plays, or the roles that the different parts of your mind play in a game of golf. The conscious mind, the logical, analytical brain is going to be at work only during the pre-shot routine. So that's, that's deciding on which the right shot to play. That's calculating, the yardage. That's, making sure that you're going through that sequence of steps throughout your routine, keeping you focused on the right things throughout your routine. But when you're ready to go, and you might have some confidence triggers and some go triggers in your as a part of your routine. As soon as you're ready to go, that's when the conscious mind shuts off completely. And whether it's non-conscious or subconscious, it's, you know, there's absolutely nothing but the you know, a thoughtless swing, a thought-free, I should say, thought-free swing being executed.
Actually, Colin Cromack was on the Golf Smarter podcast back in 2008. So, and we talked, and we talked to him about target-oriented golf, which was an epiphany for me. I love talking about target golf.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the fundamentals of his program. But I mean, for me, the precise, I tell the players that I work with, you know, where is your target? Where's your target? It always comes down to where is your target. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of the average players that I speak to are just aiming center of fairway, center of green. They don't even have like a precise target. And it's amazing how, I mean, especially for the short game, you know, just having like spots that you're aiming at, and just you become connected with the target, connected with the shot. And that takes away, you know, any focus on your swing, which is a negative, which is negatively going to impact your play. It's always, you're always thinking about the shot and the target, and you're seeing that in your mind's eye right up until, you know, you take the club back. And so, I can't emphasize enough how, you know, target, shot shape, visualizing, becoming connected with that particular shot, is going to help. And I know that a lot of players, you know, when they're making their practice swings, they're just, you know, they're working on a drill, or they're trying to correct, you know, what they thought the problem was in the swing on their last shot, instead of using that time to really become connected with that shot that they're about to play, for seeing the target, seeing the shot shape, and really becoming connected with it.
You know, I would think that if people had a better sense, if golfers had a better sense of strategy, or what they like to call course management, I think that everybody out on the fairways and at the tee box would be better golfers. They would cut down some strokes. But getting onto the putting green, to me, is where the mental game seems to have the most powerful impact. You recently wrote a piece called The Five Most Common Putting Mistakes. Can we talk about that?
Yeah, I can. I don't have that article in front of me, but I'll try.
Come on, you wrote it. You know what it is.
Pardon?
You wrote it. You know what it is.
Yeah. Well, the closer you get to the hole, you know, the closer you get to your score. So that's where we feel pressure. I mean, it's the it's the easiest. The easiest shot to play. I mean, it's easier than any other shot that you're faced with on the golf course. But it's where we make the most. It seems like it's where we make the most mistakes.
Oh yeah, and feel the most pressure, I would think.
It's where we feel the most pressure, and it's where we need to have, you know, where we need to have a lot of discipline, where we need to, you know, make sure that the process is good, make sure that breathing is good, and, you know, not thinking about the consequences of, you know, of the putt and the score and what it might do for you. And these are things that with the right techniques, the right, you know, knowing how to switch off and not think about score and focusing on process, because process is just one of those things that you know you can rely on in any situations. That's always going to help you calm down. And if you've got a good putting process, that's really going to help you. And Jack Nicklaus said that he never missed a putt in his mind. And I think that's a good way to think about it, because if you know that you've gone through your process, you've visualized, you've felt the putt, you've seen it, you've done everything you can, you possibly can, you've read, given the putt a good read, and you've gone through your process. That's all you can do. The rest is out of your control. And I think that another thing that's important in the mental game is self-talk and phrases that you can include in your game. So when you're standing over a 10-15 foot putt, ask yourself a question: is this possible? And by asking yourself that question, and your response should be, yeah, it is possible. Instead of, I've got to make this, I'm going to make this. It's, you take pressure off yourself. You're not expecting to make anything. You're expecting to go through your process as well as you can. And when you think that, even on the PGA Tour, they're missing 50% of putts over about 5 feet, it's, there really shouldn't be any pressure. Best thing you can do is just go through your routine.
Yeah, but I know that if I were to ask myself, "Is this possible?" the answer is always, "Of course, it's possible." Is it probable that I'm going to make it? That's when doubt enters the conversation in my head. But if I walk up to a putt and and I'm looking at the putt as I'm walking towards the green, I'm going, I got this one. I know I got this one. This one, I walk in with total confidence. Instead of questioning myself, I feel more comfortable. But then when I'm standing over the ball, the doubt enters and I start questioning, do you really got this one? It's a very thin line you're walking between asking yourself, can I do this, versus telling yourself, I can do this. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that, the intention is to make every shot. I'd say within 50 yards, I think the intention should be to make every shot. The closer, the more positive and the more precise your visualization for the shot, the closer you're going to get to the target. So I would always say that the intention is to make the shot. But I think that I don't think there's any harm in sort of pre-accepting, a miss. The worst thing you can do is to, say, I'm going to make this. Not the worst thing, but it doesn't help you to say, I'm going to make this, because you're setting that expectation that if you don't make that putt, then you failed. So I think the intention through your routine, the intention is to make every putt. You're seeing it go in. I mean, you're even being as detailed as to see, where on the hole the ball is going to fall in. But I think that those, building in a bit of acceptance into your routine so that you don't disappoint yourself when you do miss, can help steady the ship.
Excellent advice. In your putting mistakes article, I'm curious why you say it's a mistake to... Are you saying it's a mistake to not find out whether you're a straight back, straight through putter or an arc putter? Or are you saying it is a mistake to worry about that?
I would say, this is it's more of a technical thing, actually. But everyone has, some players take it straight back, straight through, and some putt, with the putter going on an arc. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure you have the right equipment for that. There's a, face balance putter and a, heel or toe weighted putter. So if you're a straight back, straight through, you want to have a face balance putter and know what the difference is. Because that can affect your stroke.
Can you explain face balance putter for those who don't know?
So a face balance putter is when there's equal weight across the face of the putter. And you can test this out by holding the putter, a few inches from the head of the putter on the shaft, and you can see how the putter is balanced, whether it's balanced in the toe or the heel, or it just lies flat.
So if you are a straight back, straight through, then you do want face balanced.
You want a face balanced putter, yeah.
Okay, and if your stroke is on an arc around, like, and that arc is like around your body, not the arc of a full swing. That arc, you want to have a heel weighted putter. Why is that?
That's a technical question. Huh?
Okay.
But it's just to do with the movement that the the putter's naturally going to take when it gets, you know, if you were to take it back on a pendulum.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have thought that if you're taking it straight back and you've got a heel weighted putter, you're going to be kind of like fighting against the putter's natural movement.
Mm-hmm. And then getting too technical is what you think is also a very big issue for most people, is they spend too much time forcing that? Is that what you mean by being too technical?
Yeah, I do. I think the putting, you know, as we just discussed, putting is probably the most mental part of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it should, for me, it's an art, not a science. And I think that, you know, even with, you know, I could use a, you know, one of those old bullseye putters and play just as well as, you know, using one of the, you know, the most recent super duper putters, because for me it's all about, you know, how well I visualized the line, how well I felt it, and really got into the putt itself instead of anything to do with my stroke. I think that same with the long game. If you've got strong fundamentals and you know you're setting up consistently to every putt, and you know, I mean, alignment is absolutely key, and that's another one of the mistakes, is that, you know, you can have a great visualization and great feel and great green reading, but if you don't actually put the putter face down in line with where you want the ball to start, then you're going to miss the putt. So good fundamentals, and then really good alignment, and making sure that your alignment is absolutely spot on.
The place where I find the mental game intersects so much with the physical elements, the swing mechanics, are in my short game, whether it be bunker play or chipping. Because where I think I understand what I'm supposed to be doing and I have the tools to do it properly, but my head gets into, you know, like, the amount of pressure, the amount of the backswing, the, you know, how much do I hit down on it? How, you know, there's so many different technical elements that get in the way of the mental game when the mental game is so important when it comes to the short part of your game.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's so many different ways that you can play those short shots, and, you know, I know exactly what you mean. You know, when you're in a bunker and you've got a certain kind of lie, and you're thinking, you know, well, you know, how's this gonna pop out? How deep's the sand? And, you know, there's all sorts of things that are going through your head. And I think that, you know, commitment to a bad shot is going to result better than, you know, not committing to a good shot. If you understand what I mean. So
not
the
at
more
all.
Committed you
I,
can...
I have no idea what that meant.
So, for example, I would say that whatever you decide, no matter how good a player you are around the greens or, you know, out of bunkers, committing and believing that you can hit those shots is going to help you out more than any kinds of thoughts, technical thoughts about, you know, how far you should open the club face and how far, you know, how deep you should hit through the sand. Those are things that you can figure out in your practice, your practice swings and your preparation for the shot. And I think that if you've had more meaningful practice sessions where you actually like put yourself in tricky situations and you have to, you know, you're experimenting with different lies and you're experimenting with opening the club face to various degrees, the game can become more instinctive, and those shots can become more instinctive, so that you'll have a lot more confidence over them instead of having to fill your head with all the technical stuff. But I would just say that committing to the shot you've chosen and setting up in the correct way to be able to play that shot is all you really need to focus on.
Is it possible to convince yourself that you're confident?
I think so. I think that there's a couple of types of confidence. There's the external confidence and there's internal confidence. External confidence isn't long lasting. It's, you know, external confidence is based on how well you're playing. And most people think that confidence is a result of how well you just played, you know, played the last shot or played the last hole or played the last round. When really we want to think about confidence being something that you can generate within, which then affects your play. If you're thinking about confidence as being, you know, you have to be playing well to build confidence, and you put more pressure on your game, and you know you don't feel like you're as good a player after hitting a couple of bad shots, whereas confidence can be built through you know, from the inside out. If you can start to, you know, imagine yourself as a good player and convincing yourself that you're a good player and talking to yourself in the right way when you're out on the golf course, you can build confidence that is much more long-lasting and enduring.
And at what point does the confidence take control over your mechanics? Does that make sense? Like, how do I word this properly so it makes sense? At what point in your game does the mental game have a stronger impact than your mechanics in helping you get to lower scores? Is this working? Is that question making any sense?
It does.
We talked earlier about how you went from an 18 or you went from an 11 down, you know, you had all the mechanics there. And then we talked about what about a middle handicapper who would love to go from an 18, 19 down to 10 or 11. I mean, just getting close to 10 is a great accomplishment for somebody, you know, knowing that, you know, single digits may never be part of my life.
Right. I think that no matter what level of player you are, you can instantly take shots off your game with a better mental approach. And I do understand.
Completely agree
your
with
question.
You.
But most people people that either visit my website or talk to me about the mental game, and, you know, when I'm out on the golf course and I'm talking to people, they don't think they're ready for the mental game. They think that it's for the elite player, and, you know, they haven't mastered the golf swing yet. So why would they be thinking about trying to learn the mind game? When I would say that there's no sooner time than now to start learning the mental game, no matter what player you are. I mean, it's just when I watch tour players or walk around with very good players, there's just things that they do that don't require any physical skill that probably, make them like, four or five shots better per round. And, you know, who doesn't want to knock four or five shots off their score, no matter, whether a 28 handicapper or a 16 handicapper, it's stuff that doesn't require any physical skill. And just, following a process. I mean, these things, it's not instantaneous. You know, you have to go through the practice just like you do with the mental game, but it gets you there. It gets you there quicker.
And I think you could help us get there too.
Yes. Yeah. I most certainly can. It's a fascinating area of the game, and, you know, my eyes, you know, were just, you know, open to it through my performance. That, you know, when I started on this route of really trying to understand about the mental side of the game and how it is a game of mostly, you know, emotional and mental management. As I said before, I'm not discounting, swing mechanics. What I am saying is that there's way too much focus on swing, on equipment, and, there's other things like ego and score, stuff like that. But if you can refocus on what's really important and is really going to, to take you to the next level quicker and more effectively, and you'll have more fun as a result.
Well, I hope so. And I think so. Well, David, you've got, like I was saying before on the previous episode, that your website, golfstateofmind.com, is just a wealth of video and writings and articles on the mental game, but it's not just focused on mental part. You go into the short game and putting and practice and make recommendations on books. It's really a great website. And I want to thank Nick Chertok, who's a longtime Golf Smarter listener, for introducing us.
Yes, yeah, I appreciate that too. Yeah, he's been a friend for quite a few years now, and I always enjoy his little him sparking the conversations on Facebook, and he knows his stuff.
And if anybody wants to contact David, you can do so. Just go to his website, and again, you can get his free newsletter. And he's got a lot of goodies he's given away, but if you want to spend more time with him, I'm sure he's not giving that away, but you can check it out. David McKenzie, thank you so much for coming on to the Golf Smarter podcast and sharing your methods and your teachings.
Thank you very much, Fred. I love talking about this stuff. This is my passion, and I've been a big fan of your Golf Smarter podcast for a long time now, and it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Up next, golf stats take a page from baseball's sabermetrics. We're calling it putting is overrated. That should get your attention, huh? If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.